because she was a member of the royal family, even though she was tremendously beloved for her work with the poor, still she was seen as a threat. She was seen that way anyway by the Bolsheviks, who were driven really, you know, to demonic frenzy against the royal family.
Today on Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network, we have two compelling and very different stories of physical challenge, spiritual commitment, learning and understanding, community support, and eventual blessing.
You know, having the Orthodox Christian faith as just an integral part of our family, that just illuminated the darkness that we initially felt. You know, once I understood that God was working in and through our son, it became impossible to feel like we were victims.
And welcome to another edition of this weekly visit we call Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and we'll hear from him in just a moment. We're going to talk with one half of a parenting team who have an autistic son, and we'll place a call to one half of a writing team who have researched the unique aspects of married saints. And believe it or not, there are some interesting intersections in the two stories we'll share with you. If you have a friend or family member who you think would like to listen to one or both of these conversations, please point them to our website at myocn.net or to our Facebook page. You can link through to our archives for the broadcast from either location. If you haven't spent time on our Facebook page, just search MyOCN and perhaps join the more than 200,000 others who have said they like what they see and read on our Facebook page. And again, our website is myocn.net. Well, Stephen Yates is on the phone with Father Chris as we begin today to talk about his book, Getting My First Hug, a father's story of his son's triumph over autism.
Thanks for being with us today, Stephen.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Father Chris.
At the beginning of the book, you say that most of us think miracles are rare occurrences that happened a long time ago. But what if miracles happen all around us each and every day? What if seeing the miracles was the rare part? Talk with us about your thoughts about that, Stephen.
Well, you know, We live in a world that's really filled with miracles, with miraculous beauty, nature, the people that we meet, all of it. And most of us are generally so focused on getting through the day and the things we've got to do that we rarely look up and see how truly extraordinary the world and everyone in it is. There's that old expression, taking time to smell the roses. Mm-hmm. So few of us do. I remember when our priest took our son to serve in the altar, and he did a great job, and afterwards I told him, I said, I think this is a miracle. Hmm. And he looked at me and he said, you know, every child is a miracle. Hmm. And it suddenly dawned on me how true that was, that these miracles, we're surrounded by them. And if we just take the time to, or the perspective to look, we begin to see them, and it's a wonderful, enriching experience.
Tell us briefly about the emotional journey that has been involved here.
Well, you know, from my perspective, and I tell the story of the book from the father's perspective, you know, I started out as a guy going to work, very into the day-to-day. I didn't really notice that there was anything different about our son. Mm-hmm. And when my wife began to suggest that there might be some issues, I fell into denial. I said, no, there's nothing wrong with this kid. And then as it became a little more obvious to me, I became kind of confused and very fearful about, you know, what is this? This has suddenly snuck up on me now. You know, she suggested, you know, you should take some time and sit down and really try to interact with him. Mm-hmm. And as I did, I began to accept who he was and how he was. And at that point, I could engage with my wife to try to find strategies and therapies and ways for us to move forward. So for me, it really was a spectrum of emotion. And at this point now, my son is 20. goes to college. He's being very successful. And I'm just, you know, I'm in awe. I have this sort of, you know, that's the emotion that's with me most of the time, is I can't believe how blessed we've been and how this miracle that we were just talking about has happened. You know, we think of one goal or another: graduate high school, get a driver's license, you know, get succeed in college. I think, you know, if only we could get that, you know, we'll be happy. But each and every time we've set a goal like that, our son has managed to exceed our expectations. And I tell people I've stopped betting against him, because there's no winning those bets.
When that's good. When did the first signs of autism appear?
You know, I think it was probably between the ages of 2 and 3. I think there was normal development, and even the development of speech was progressing at that point. But then it began to cease and regress a bit, and that was very, very frightening. And it was then that we began to engage in sort of positive steps, therapies, testing, to try to determine what were we dealing with here, and then what, if anything, could be done.
One of the things you point out in the book is that we can't simply label people with autism or even other disorders as being different, because we're all different. How can we be sensitive to the special needs of people with autism and other developmental or physical disabilities without making them feel isolated or, I guess, even at times ashamed?
Well, Father Chris, I'm a Sunday school teacher in the Orthodox Church, and I tell my students, one of the lessons that I do each year is I say, let's all stand up and say the first words of the Lord's Prayer. And the first two words, as you well know, our Father. And I tell them, well, you know, if he's truly our Father, then we're all brothers and sisters. And if we truly realize that we're all equal in God's sight, then we can treat everyone with the same love and kindness and the same dignity and the same sense of humor that we have toward everyone. It's a behavior that you have to unlearn, treating people differently for one reason or another, whether it's because of a physical or a developmental disability or just because they're different, a race or ethnicity. I remember being at a party a number of years ago, and there was a guest there who had cerebral palsy. And he, you know, looked different, and he behaved different, and he sounded different. And I remember trying to be cool and, you know, not stare at him and not feel uncomfortable to be sitting across from him. And I was focused on the differences between him and me. But then as the party went on, he was from Philadelphia, and he started talking about Philadelphia politics. And he was so funny. He had such a sense of humor, and he had all these stories from growing up. And I remember just, I began to laugh, and he just drew me in. And by the time the end of the party came, all I could see was his humanity and how similar he was to me and to everybody else that was there. And I think that's really a process that everybody needs to go through. And you have to unlearn that focus that we have on differences, and really think about the fact, you know, come back to that Our Father and say, you know, this person sitting across from me is just like me in God's eyes. And I need to feel that way too.
I'm sure there have been challenges in raising your son. Any child with a developmental issue, I'm sure, is going to create some issues for family. I mean, you admit, though, that your son has been able to make more progress than many others with autism. Let me ask you this, and maybe this is too painful, but let's ask it anyway. How have other parents of autistic children reacted to your story? I mean, is there some jealousy? Do they want to know more about it? What is it like for you to share your son's triumph with those whose children may not be able to accomplish as much?
You know, that's a great question, and I have spoken quite a number of times with parents of kids who have, you know, frankly, you know, more profound issues, and for whom, you know, the outlook may not be as optimistic. And it's interesting that I've never sensed anything but support and a sense of camaraderie with those parents, because we don't measure the disability and look at it as a yardstick for how much we care. Mm. When you're talking with a parent who's committed to their child and who is in it for the long haul, good or bad, you're just almost immediately brought in onto the same team. And it's true that my burden may be lighter, but we exchange stories, and they're always interested to know, you know, what worked for you, what mm-hmm. didn't work for you, what have you tried, you know, where have you gone, what testing have you had done. Mm-hmm. You know, they're always interested in trying to create progress for their children. And so they're always, it's like they're too busy to be jealous or resentful, and they're much more about the task of trying to make progress. And it becomes a sort of a mutual support network where you're exchanging tips and tricks mm-hmm. and ideas for dealing with schools. There's a lot of commonality, schools and therapists, how do you deal with bullies and sports and things that your children might be able to do, you know, what's been your experience. And, you know, I always emphasize that our son's progress is, you know, number one, it's a result of his hard work, but also God's grace. And, you know, no one's ever taken issue with that or you know, felt like that it's unfair. They know that we were lucky, that we're blessed. And, you know, I love to brag about him, but I equally enjoy hearing the success stories from others. And even if their success is at a smaller scale, it's still, as a parent of a child with special needs, you know, I'm able to see that even that small thing is a big thing for them, that the child can, you know, tie his shoe or is able to go to school for, you know, a few hours a day. You know, that may be a tremendous accomplishment for them, and you have to celebrate that and see it for what it really is. And so, you know, I've really gotten nothing but support from other parents.
Okay. Well, clearly, when you have a child with special needs, that child takes full priority over everything. And that can be draining. We know that. That can be draining to a couple. It can be draining to a family. I'm sure from hearing you speak now that you feel that children are a blessing no matter what. But I would also add that parents are a blessing, because the parent and the child have to go together. And then, of course, there's a triple blessing, which is the family is a blessing too. As everything we know in the Orthodox Church is in threes, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, I can make the jump. Please forgive me. The expert theologians out there will forgive me, but I'll make that comparison, if you will, to that triple blessing, that three person that is very, the three persons that are very important in any relationship, the child, the parent, and the family. Talk with us for a minute about the role of your Orthodox faith and how has that played in the family's life through all of this?
Well, you know, I, first of all, I do forgive you for that analogy, because I think it's a beautiful one. You know, with anything, as I was going through the process that I went through, you know, the temptation is at first to ask, you know, why me? You know, to take on the role of a victim. You know, why us? You know, why is this happening to us? Mm-hmm. But you know, having the Orthodox Christian faith as just an integral part of our family, that just illuminated the darkness that we initially felt. And you know, once I understood that God was working in and through our son, it became impossible to feel like we were victims. God is awesome in his might, and he never fails us. And there's inspiration and hope on every page of the Gospels. And as we would attend services and we would hear the messages of the Gospels through our priest, it every week it seemed like he was talking just to us. And I can't tell you, it was uncanny the number of times my wife and I would walk out of the services and say, can you? It's like he was reading our minds this week with the message that he gave us, and ultimately we were just filled. And as we approach the great and holy Lent season right now, I'm reminded of that verse. You know, if God is with us, who can be against us? And so the faith was just—it was everything to us. We knew that we would not be failed by God, and that we wouldn't fail in this, because He was with us. And so I often wonder about people who don't have faith and how can they get by? Because it's something that it carries us each and every day.
Tell us a little bit about your son's relationship, if I'm not prying too much, with the church, with Christ. What's happened to him as he's grown now? You say he's 20 years old.
Well, I can tell you honestly that our son is deeply religious, and he's very serious about his faith. And I think through every step along the way, as he became self-aware and became aware that he had these differences, and as he overcame them, that the Orthodox Christian faith was supported him as well, and it was something that was inside him. And often these days, or actually really through the years, because he's tall, he's been asked to carry the cross in the great entrance as part of the Divine Liturgy. And every time I see him, I feel God present in him. And I remember so clearly the day that Father Peter came to us and said, you know, I want him in the altar. Mm. And we said, oh, that's nice, but you know, it really can't be. He's got these issues, and he can't do that. And he said, well, you know, I'm asking you today, but you know, eventually, I'm just going to come for him. and he goes, he saw the panic on my face, and he goes, name a place where he would be safer than in God's altar. Mm. And it was, you know, it just hit me like a truck. It's like, well, I guess there really isn't. And he goes, you know, that if he can stand and hold a candle, you know, then he's serving. Wow. And he goes, and I want him there, and I need him there. And sure enough, there came a day when one of the altar boys came out to the pew, and he motioned. I thought he was motioning for me, and he said, no. And then he pointed to my son, and my son got up and walked around and thought, and next thing I know, there he was. Standing up in the altar. So it's been a part of him for, you know, his whole life.
Well, it is truly a tremendous, true story that you're willing to share with us, and we thank you for that. For parents out there who are facing some kind of struggle with their children, whether it's autism or a different special need, is there a certain verse or quote that you could share with us to give them strength?
Well, I will tell you the one that I have turned to time and time again, and that's the Gospel according to St. John, chapter 9. Verses 1 through 3, which was, as you know, Jesus and the man born blind. And as Jesus passed by, he saw this man that was born, who was blind from birth, and the disciples asked him, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind? And Jesus answered, it was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but so that the works of God might be displayed in him. And the next time you see a person, or if you have someone in your family who's different in some way, remember that God's works and his might are right there in that person. Walk up and say hello, and you'll feel the light that's within them. And that verse, that chapter and verse, I've turned to time and time again, and I've found it to probably be the truest, you know, the one that touches home for me the most of all the verses in the gospel.
Stephen, it's been an honor to have you on the program today to speak with you. Again, listeners, please go to our Amazon store online. You click on one of the sections there, you'll see it on the top of the website, and you can purchase the book, Getting My First Hug, A Father's Story of His Son's Triumph Over Autism. Our special guest today was Stephen E. Yates. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Father Chris.
And when you purchase that book or any other item by linking through our website, you generate back to this ministry a portion of your expenditure in the form of a donation. Now, did I make that clear? If you purchase anything on Amazon and go through our website, a portion of what you spend comes back to us in the form of a donation. What a great way to support this worldwide outreach. The website again is myocn.net, and the link to the web store is right there on the homepage. And the title of the book again is Getting My First Hug, A Father's Story of His Son's Triumph Over Autism, and the author is Stephen Yates. Also, when you go to our website and click on the Listen button at the top of the homepage, you'll have the option of linking to this broadcast, Come Receive the Light, along with a host of other audio options, including a regular podcast, a new podcast, featuring our next guest.
Dr. David Ford is professor of church history at St. Tikhon's Orthodox Theological Seminary in South Canaan, Pennsylvania. He and his wife are the authors of Marriage as a Path to Holiness, Lives of Married Saints, which has been republished in honor of the 20th anniversary. It's a totally updated version, includes 50 new saints. Dr. Ford has started doing a monthly feature with us, and today we're kicking off that by talking about St. Elizabeth, the new martyr, one of the most remarkable, noble women ever. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you, Father Chris.
Let me ask you to set the scene and tell us about her noble birth and upbringing.
Okay. She was born in 1864 to Prince Louis IV of Hesse-Darmstadt. This was a small principality in southwestern Germany. Her father would come to be the Grand Duke of that principality. Her mother was one of the daughters of Queen Victoria. So she is actually the granddaughter of Queen Victoria, as well as being in the nobility in southwestern Germany.
So when she married the Grand Duke of Russia?
Yes, one of the Grand Dukes.
One of the Grand Dukes, okay.
Yeah.
So she becomes Orthodox, and then tragically her husband is assassinated.
Yes.
So what happens then in that point of her life?
Well, her husband was made the mayor of Moscow. He was assassinated by a terrorist in 1905. And, of course, her whole life now is so different. She turns even more to the Lord. She simplifies her life, and she starts dreaming of starting a convent for women that would be dedicated to helping the poor. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a struggle for her to bring this about. In the end, it takes the direct intercession of the Tsar, Nicholas II, who was her brother-in-law. It grows tremendously from 6 to 97 members in the very first year.
6 to 97?
Yes, wow. Yes. And it is dedicated. They go into the poorest districts of Moscow to help the poor in any way they can, especially through medical attention. Mm-hmm. And they develop a clinic that is so advanced that three of the leading surgeons in Moscow would help out doing surgery there.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
St. Elizabeth, as we said before, is called the new martyr.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the end of her life?
Okay. Because she was a member of the royal family, even though she was tremendously beloved for her work with the poor, still, she was seen as a threat, some kind of, maybe in the future, some kind of political threat. She was seen that way, anyway, by the Bolsheviks, who were driven, really, you know, to demonic frenzy against the royal family, and by extension, to all the Romanov family. Mm-hmm. And so, she did suffer then at their hands. She was arrested with several others of the royal family, and various servants who were with them. One night, they were shoved into a mine, an empty mine shaft. And so,
it's amazing how the evil of the world always tries to stifle that which is noble and good and of God. And yet, in the end, we know who wins out. So it is amazing.
I know.
She's an incredibly popular saint, as you said, in Russia, but not only in Russia, throughout the Western world.
Yeah.
Would you talk a little bit about her legacy and why you think her story is such an accessible and maybe even an appealing one, maybe even to non-Orthodox?
Yes, it is so appealing in a number of ways. The way she overcomes the terrible tragedy of her husband's assassination, the way she comes into Orthodoxy and finds such wonderful spiritual riches in Orthodoxy, more than she had experienced before, and how the strength of Orthodoxy then helped her so vividly, so powerfully in her later years, her years of widowhood, and how she was able to devote those years to serving the poor in such very dramatic ways. Her relics are in Jerusalem at the monastery of St. Mary Magdalene, and we recall how her trip to the Holy Land was made such an impact in her life back in 1888. And so she is resting where she wanted to be.
Thank you, Dr. Ford, for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Well, you've been spending your precious time listening to Father Christopher Metropoulos on this broadcast called Come Receive the Light, an outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network. By the way, if you're hearing this online, just know that we also air on a host of radio stations throughout the U.S. and in other parts of North America. And if your church or parish would like to sponsor the program on a station in your area, reaching many people who perhaps would never come to our website, just get in touch with us through the website myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout. As I said, our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Thanks to our executive producer, Ann Dankert. We'll be back next week with new guests and new topics. Until then, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.